This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from State Representative John Bell Edwards of AME, Democratic candidate for governor in 2015, and a man who is busy in the state legislature as head of the House Democratic Caucus. We'll talk with him about the upcoming session. It all starts Monday with Governor Jindal addressing lawmakers. And John Bell Edwards, of course, will be an active participant. Also on the show today, we are scheduled to talk with Stephanie Regal, the editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. Stephanie has opined a bit about the situation with St. George and where we go from here. We'll talk with her about that and much more as we move along and get the latest on what's going on in our community. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and Stephanie Regal is with us. Michael Farrar producing. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. InksterShow@WRKF.org. In just a bit, we will hear from John Bell Edwards, candidate for governor next year. But there's much happening in our community this year, and Stephanie Regal is on top of it at the Business Report, and the big story continues to be what's going on with St. George, but there, of course, is much more happening than that. And Stephanie Regal has been on top of a story that has been simmering for the last few days. State Senator Robert Adley plans to introduce legislation during the session that begins Monday that would restrict judicial fundraising activities. What's happening here, Stephanie Regal? Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Well, we did a story last week, and it was something that someone had just pointed out to us, really. It was a fundraiser that was held last week for 19th Judicial District Court Judge Janice Clark, who's been a judge here forever. And really, there was no big deal, particularly with the fundraiser. It was hosted by 37 local attorneys, most of them trial attorneys. And they basically just lent their name to the committee. I don't know who gave how much money. Presumably they had to give something to host the fundraiser. But among those on the list was an attorney locally here, Wade Shows, who's doing contract work for the state attorney general in this tremendous lawsuit against the oil and gas companies that's brewing. And part of that litigation is in Clark's court presently. And so the idea that he would have been among those hosting a fundraiser for her when he's practicing, you know, in her court raises some questions. And that was our report last week that we did. And, you know, I checked around, and there's no violation of the ethics code, and there's no violation of campaign finance laws, because really the campaign finance laws are pretty lax when it comes to judges. And so subsequent to that, State Senator Robert Adley, as you mentioned, sent a letter to the U.S., to the state Supreme Court, and said, look, you know, y'all have to do a better job of policing yourselves. This doesn't pass the smell test. And I'd like someone to look into this. And he suggested that he would also look at legislation to maybe clamp down a little bit on the types of campaign contributions that judges can receive, you know, in terms of from lawyers who are practicing in their courts.
297-5633. So Robert Adley is on top of this, and he is a man who has been backed by corporate interests, as General Honore, who was on this show yesterday, noted. Robert Adley's in the oil and gas business.
So, right. So does he have a dog in this fight as well? Maybe. So, but his, you know, motives aside, I think the point is still well taken that this is something we should look at. You know, I mean, and there's long been a debate about whether we should have appointed judges versus elected judges. Of course, we have elected judges in this state. And Adley said, you know, I've always been against appointed judges, but if we don't do something, I would even be willing to revisit that issue. And I spoke to Robert Travis Scott at PAR yesterday, and he said that David Vitter was looking very hard at this, too, and was going to be making an issue.
It sounds like an issue that Senator Vitter would find interesting. But corporate interests won't be prohibited from contributing to judges, and they have interest in courtrooms as well. So is this basically picking on trial lawyers?
Well, I think, I mean, it could be seen that way. I mean, I think there are a lot of reforms that need to take place, and there are many things that we could and should do and probably won't, because we just don't here in Louisiana. But, I mean, at least if we get the ball rolling, it's better than nothing, I think.
Well, it's a legitimate issue, and you're correct, and it's been addressed before. Lawyers often say, though, who is better suited to make judgment on a judge or a potential judge than people who are in the profession?
Well, and it is just like insurance companies give money to candidates mm-hmm. for insurance commissioner, and, you know, bond attorneys give money to state treasurers. Right. That's the way the system works. But there are, I think, certain parameters and safeguards that could be put in place. And, you know, hitherto, judges have been sort of exempt from the same kind of scrutiny that legislators have.
297-5633, Charles in Opelousas. Charles, good morning. You're on the air with Stephanie Regal.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question and maybe a suggestion. The question is there any exemption for legislators who are attorneys from working for the state, or any legislator, senator, representative from working for the state? And maybe this is the time for comprehensive campaign reform. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, I think that's a wonderful idea. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't tell you what the state ethics code specifically, you know, allows and prohibits.
Lawmakers can work for the state. In fact, elected officials can work as lawyers, including the DA. In East Baton Rouge, the mayor has a law office. If I get a misdemeanor, I know who I'm calling, calling the mayor or the DA.
But, you know, the thing is, we talk about this every few years, or some little issue or story will come up and it'll raise some questions. But I think, you know, the caller is right. We need some sort of comprehensive, overarching effort to look at this, you know, from a system-wide perspective. And I just wonder if there's the political will to really make it happen.
We'll find out. But my guess is that it will be a contentious discussion if it gets very far. And Senator Adley, I think, would acknowledge that he is a pro-business person. And Wade Shows, in the case we're talking about, is representing the Attorney General in a lawsuit filed against him by the Louisiana Oil and Gas Association, which is, of course, near and dear to the heart of Robert Roy Adley, Vietnam veteran and senator from the great town of Benton, Louisiana.
Yes.
Okay. A few other things. St. George. That's the big story for this year. What's going on with that endeavor?
You know, it's funny because after the year began with so many big announcements related to St. George and so much activity, and then everything kind of went quiet. I think a lot has been going on behind the scenes. On the side of those who are in favor of incorporating St. George, they're still trying to gather signatures. From what I can gather, I think the petition drive, is more slow than they would have hoped. They won't disclose numbers. They won't reveal or release any polling data. So we don't really know how many signatures they have. They said at the beginning of the year they were halfway to their goal of 20,000. They only need 18,000, but they want to have 20,000 because they figure some are going to be thrown out. They've been saying 10,000 now for like 3 months, and we haven't heard of much progress. On the other side, you know, the business community is, I think, generally very much against this. They won't talk about it. They're quietly raising money behind the scenes. They won't address how their fundraising efforts are going. They won't talk about who's really helping to raise the money. They don't return phone calls when you ask them about it. They point fingers and say, we're not doing it. The chamber's doing it. No, the chamber says, we're not doing it. The foundation's doing it. And the foundation says, no, we're not involved in that at all. That's the business community. Somebody's involved in doing it. But what we did find out last week is there have been a lot of efforts coming from somewhere downtown to perhaps try to annex some of those big revenue-generating properties that are in the unincorporated areas that would be in St. George. But if they were annexed into the city of Baton Rouge, then that would take away the revenue stream that St. George is relying on. And part of those talks involve annexing the properties mm-hmm. that are adjacent to the big revenue generators, the casino, the Mall of Louisiana, Perkins Row. And so that includes some of the LSU properties that are not on the campus, but a little bit away from the campus, the Ben Hur Farm, which is a giant farm out off of Nicholson, and also some other properties out in that Gardier area. And so the city would need to annex that land in order to be able to annex the casino, because the properties have to be contiguous with the city boundaries. So LSU said last week that they had been approached, that that idea had been floated by them, and that right. they are kind of looking at it. So there are different things going on behind the scenes. And then meanwhile, you have efforts within the school system to maybe try to come up with some sort of plan that might appease those that are pushing for the St. George Incorporation. Maybe hoping that if there are some improvements to the school system, it might diffuse some of the, you know, impetus to incorporate St. George.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation with Stephanie Regal in just a bit. John Bell Edwards is going to be with us. But Stephanie has covered Louisiana people and politics for some time, 12 years a reporter at WWL-TV in New Orleans, and also worked as the food editor of the Baton Rouge Advocate. And the last 2 years and counting has been the editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. You've got a new executive editor there.
That's right, David Dodson, who was here 30 years ago.
So. He was a good man, and he knows this community well, and I would think you would be a formidable team. What happened to that guy, J.R. Ball? Where did he go?
He is the managing editor at NOLA.com, which has a Baton Rouge bureau now.
I know, and he was with us on his 50th birthday, October 1st, 1963, was the day Walter Ball was born, and I hear he's doing good work at the at NOLA.com. But that brings into light what's going on with journalism in general, and you've been in television, you've been other places, and certainly a lot of time in print. Is the world evolving to an online medium?
It really is. I think it's just a matter of time until everything is digital. And there are those who are saddened by that, and there are those who try to fight it or who say it's a shame. But it's just a fact. It's the way that we're getting our information today, you know. And I think the model that NOLA.com has adopted clearly shows that all they're about is digital. And I think it's just a matter of time until they even cease their three-day-a-week publication in New Orleans and go entirely digital. The Advocate, you know, I mean, John Georges said last year when he bought it that his, you know, his business model was relatively short term. Mm-hmm. I mean, and maybe 10 years, but beyond that, there's just no real future. Our growth at the Business Report, so much of it is in the Daily Report, you know, and we'll write stories in the print magazine that people don't see, that we don't get no feedback until we plug it in the Daily Report. And all of a sudden, you know, the email,
like
the comments
avalanche.
Light up. It's like an avalanche. Right. That's the way people are consuming information today.
297-5633 for Stephanie Regal. Charles downtown. Charles, you're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Stephanie. I have a two-part question. With regards to St. George, why hasn't anyone questioned Senator Boddy White? I mean, his motives seem to shift every time he reaches a roadblock, but no one seems to question him on what his ultimate motive is. My other question is, since we're talking about journalism, there's always been this question about the diversity or lack of diversity at the Business Report. You being an insider, how have you addressed this, or do you consider it to be something of non-importance?
Well, I don't consider it to be an issue of unimportance, you know, in terms of diversity. The Business Report is a very small company, and I'm not in charge of hiring practices there. We are primarily more female employees there than male. Different ethnicities. It is true that we don't have a lot of African American reporters there, but I don't think that's because of any, you know, systemic discrimination at all that's been practiced on the part of, you know, the executive team there. With respect to Boddy White, you know, he's been sort of leading the charge on the education front here all along. He was very involved in setting up the school district in Central. As to his motives, you know, I think this is his political philosophy, and his base really supports this. So that's all I, you know, could really say to that.
297-5633. Boddy White will be an active participant in the upcoming session. He's pre-filed a bill to create 4 semi-autonomous school districts in East Baton Rouge Parish. Bernard Taylor, the superintendent of schools, says this is lunacy, sadder than sad. We'll talk more with Stephanie Regal when we return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Stephanie Regal, editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, one of the fittest journalists on the planet. Did her swimming this morning and sauntered in the studio looking like, what, the proverbial $1 million? I said that to Jim Bernhardt one time, and he said, don't insult me like that. 297-5633. Colonel Henry Johnson says, regardless of you, Miss Stephanie, or anybody else, the St. George proposal is about one thing and one thing only, race. Is race a factor in this?
I really believe it is. You know, I mean, I think the St. George movement is about different things to different people. And there are those who will swear up and down it's about the schools. And I believe that. And it may have started as that. But at least among some of the supporters, there definitely is a racial overtone or underpinning to it. I mean, this really is a very divided community. And not just black, white, not just rich, poor, but, I mean, politically, you know, I mean, there are very, very divided factions in this community. And I think the St. George effort really sort of, you know, epitomizes it.
You grew up in New Orleans, and you've lived here for a long time, went to school in both cities for college. Do perceptions about race differ between New Orleans and Baton Rouge?
Yes and no. I think New Orleans, the racial problems are in some ways worse. In some ways, they're better. I mean, Baton Rouge is more divided, and typically, I mean, you know, you had sort of Florida was the dividing line. Everything north of Florida was more African-American and poor, and everything south of Florida was more white and middle class. You have subdivisions here that are just gated. You go down Highland Road, you go down Perkins Road, and you have one subdivision after another. In New Orleans, at least in the old parts of the city, it's much more integrated, you know? So, I mean, even in the heart of Uptown, you'll have Carnival Queens living in wonderful mansions in the Garden District, just two blocks from, you know, the Irish Channel neighborhoods, right, with rundown. I mean, so the fabric of the community and the way it has developed is much more integrated, and I think that has really created sort of a different flavor and a different atmosphere with respect to race relations.
Charles in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Charles. You're on
WRK. Good morning. I have a question and a comment. The question is, what would exactly be the impact on the city of Baton Rouge if St. George were to occur? The comment is that it's a fascinating lesson in civics, and I just love the debate that's going on no matter what happens. And I predict that if St. George does come to fruition, that there'll be a significant influx of middle-class blacks into the area because they don't like crime any more than anybody else.
I think you raised some very good points. You know, in terms of what would the impact be, there's the dollar loss, you know, presumably from the tax dollars. At least that's, you know, what the fear is. And according to the LSU study by Jim Richardson, the number, I think, is 50 million or something like that.
Mm-hmm. At least,
right? I think they're worried about the perception, you know, that this would be a community divided and that it might stymie economic development efforts. But, I mean, I think you raise a good point. If the St. George District were able to really create some good schools, it would attract middle-class people that right now are moving to Livingston and Ascension. I mean, I think there's some very healthy and positive changes that could come out of this debate, you know, if we as a community are really willing to put the issues on the table and try to address some of it, because it is fascinating.
We will follow you and your coverage of this in the Business Report, Stephanie. And you're now a columnist. You like that, don't you?
Yes.
Is that
very much
best thing you've ever done?
It's fun. It's fun. So.
Okay. Well, the latest issue is just out, and Stephanie has a column, and it is related in large part to St. George. Thank you.
Thank you.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. State Representative John Bell Edwards is with us as he prepares for the opening of the legislative session Monday, March 10. Good morning, Representative Edwards.
Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
Doing well, and of course, you are also on the campaign trail running for governor of the great state of Louisiana. Come next year, there will be an election now in 20 months, actually a little less than 20 months. And you have a poll that is just out as of today showing you in second place in the field, a poll conducted by the Kitchens Group, 600 likely voters, and according to the poll, Senator David Vitter is leading the pack at 26%, Representative John Bel Edwards 21%, Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden 9%, and State Treasurer John Kennedy 7%. What do you make of this survey?
Well, it's always nice to have confirmation of what you think is happening on the street, you know, anecdotally when you travel the state and meet and talk to people and find out what they're thinking and what they're saying. But the fact that that I'm 5 points behind someone who's been elected statewide twice and been in public office now for well over two decades, you know, it just shows how hard I've been working and also how well my candidacy and my message is being received around the state, because unlike the other folks in the poll, I have never run statewide before. And so you have a name recognition problem as you start any campaign like that. But it shows that we're overcoming that and that there is an awful lot of room for growth for my candidacy, but that is not necessarily the case for the others because they are known commodities.
The poll conducted from February 10 through 12 has this as the composition of the survey: 43% Democrat, 40% Republican. The actual voter registration in Louisiana is 47% Democrat, 28% Republican. 70% of the respondents were white, 25% African American. The actual voter registration, 64% white and 31% African American. The margin of error, 4.2%. So it is a legitimate survey, if anything, tilted toward Republicans when you look at the actual demographics. But were there questions posed after people were informed about you and your West Point experience and things like that?
Well, they were. The results that you just mentioned, showing Senator Vitter at 26%, me at 21%, that was just the first question on the poll.
The very first question.
The very first question, without any information about the candidates. And then when they were asked head up, Senator Vitter and John Bel Edwards, he was at 38%, I was at 32%. And then after that, they were given a little information about me, you know, a white male Democrat from Amite, graduate of the Military Academy at West Point, that sort of stuff. The fact that I have served in the legislature now for 7 years and have amassed a pro-life voting record and an A with the NRA in support of the Second Amendment, but also that I've strongly opposed many of Governor Jindal's initiatives that would cut health care and public education and privatizing prisons and hospitals and efforts to increase our sales taxes to the highest in the nation. And when the people hear that, 45% of them are more likely to vote for me than they were to begin with. And then we ask the question again, you know, if the race were today in between Senator Vitter and myself, I actually leapfrog Senator Vitter and go to 42%. He goes down to 34%. And what we know is that Senator Vitter starts off with the largest block of voters. It's somewhere around 30%, 32%. But those people who are not committed to voting for him now really don't want to vote for him. I mean, they know him. He's a known commodity. He's been around for a long time. And as a result of their discomfort with him, I guess I should say, when we ask that second question head up, I actually pick up Treasurer Kennedy's voters by a 3-to-1 margin, and I pick up voters from Jay Darden by a 2-to-1 margin. So what that shows is an awful lot of potential for growth. It shows that the campaign that I'm running right now is viable. Just have to keep working really hard, not just at campaigning, but also doing my work as a legislator in a responsible way, a way that's consistent with Louisiana values, and that's what I intend to do, Jim.
297-5633 for John Bel Edwards, Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. I don't think you've been on this show since Senator Vitter made his formal announcement that he is running. What is your perception of his campaign?
Well, clearly, Senator Vitter's been around for a long time. He's been in public office for over two decades when he replaced David Duke in the legislature. And he's been elected statewide twice now as a United States Senator. And so people know him, and they know what he stands for, and clearly there's going to be a huge philosophical difference between Senator Vitter and myself, and just a big contrast for the voters, which I think is healthy. I think it's good to give the people of this state a real choice as to what direction they want the state to move in as we go forward. And certainly I wasn't surprised when he announced he was going to run last month, I guess it's back in January, because everything he's done over the last couple of years suggested that was the direction he was heading. So, you know, we're just going to have a good spirited campaign, and we're going to give the voters a real choice this year. And of course, there are others who are still saying that they're thinking about running, but to my knowledge, he and I are the only two that have absolutely declared that we will be on the ballot in October of 2015.
877-217-5757 is your number. You might even be listening in a meet. And if you are, you're near John Bell Edwards. That's his hometown. And he is coming to Baton Rouge come Monday as Governor Jindal addresses lawmakers at the opening of the session. And John Bell Edwards will be hot on the campaign trail for much of the next year and a half as he makes his case to be the governor of Louisiana. Mary in Goodwood. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Good morning. I had a question for Mr. Edwards, and this is with regards to Medicaid and the upcoming session. I was reading something in our newspaper the other day about the budget, and there seems to be a certain amount of money that is supposed to be put aside for senior citizens or the elderly in our state, and it has to do with care for them in nursing homes, which I'm hearing the governor wants to finish raiding that money so that there will be none of that left. I was wondering if you could enlighten us a little bit on what that's about.
Well, Mary, that's a good question, and it's indicative of a great many steps that this governor's taken over the last several years to raid funds in order to sweep them and place them into the annual operating budgets. When that fund was created, there was close to $900 million in the Medicaid Trust Fund for the elderly, and the design was to primarily spend the interest that it would earn in order to help care for seniors, and not just in nursing homes, but also in group-based homes as well as individual homes. And what's happened is over the years, the governor has reached in and pulled that money out and spent it, the principal, not just the interest, and to the point where one more of those grabs and that fund will be completely depleted. And it's really part of an overall effort to give the impression that we can continue to do what we're doing under Governor Jindal, and we don't have to look at revenue, we don't have to look at tax exemptions and those sorts of things, and that we can continue on and fund things in the state of Louisiana. But what we're actually doing is creating a real structural problem going forward, because we can't continue to spend. This is the classic example, because that fund is going to be gone. And so we have to do something different. We have to do something smarter. And so your question is about the Medicaid Trust Fund for the elderly, and that's just one example of the funds that have been swept and spent under this governor.
What about the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare? You have taken issue with the governor's stance on this.
I have, and for me, Jim, it's no longer about whether you like the president or whether you like the Affordable Care Act. It's whether we're going to govern ourselves in light of the reality that it is the law. And as part of the law, the disproportionate share of the hospital dollars, the DSH dollars, are going to be cut by 75% by the end of the decade. Well, that's currently how we pay for care that's given to uninsured when they show up for healthcare providers, primarily, obviously, at the hospitals. Well, if we're going to continue to have these uninsured people treated at the hospitals, and the DSH dollars are going to go away, then we have to find an alternative mechanism to fund that. And that is provided through the Medicaid expansion. And if we don't do the Medicaid expansion, that would allow health care coverage for 250,000 people working in Louisiana. This is health care for workers. The poorest of the poor already have Medicaid. These people have wage earners in their families, but they don't make enough to buy insurance on the private market, and that their employers don't offer it. So that's who we're talking about. And by the way, Jim, on these nine LSU hospitals that have been privatized, the majority of funding to meet our obligations is supposed to come from these DSH dollars that are going to go away. If we don't do the Medicaid expansion, we have no way to live up to our obligations and continue to treat these people. And when hospitals close because they can't make ends meet, they don't just close for the uninsured. They don't just close for Medicaid patients. They close for everybody in that community. And so I believe it's the right thing to do. I think it's the best choice that we have. And I'm hopeful that a majority of my colleagues will come to see that and break free from the governor, who is just being very rigid and ideological in this matter, and allow us to do what's right and best for the people of Louisiana.
Delia, writing to Inkster Show at WRKF.org, writes or asks, what kind of campaign finance reform would you push as governor?
Well, the thing that's most important about campaign finance is just 100% transparency. Whatever the limits are going to be, everybody needs to know who is given, so that they can compare and later on who's getting the benefits from state government as it relates to who paid for the candidate. So I think transparency is critically important. As it relates to state law with respect to our campaigns, I don't know that I would change much, because we have relatively low limits. There's $5,000 per person limit in any campaign cycle for a statewide office. Currently, there's no more than $80,000 in the aggregate that you can receive from PACs. Where I think campaign finance reform needs to go is when it relates to these third-party groups that spring up and want to collect just huge sums of money. And, in fact, you may recall that recently Senator Vitter's group have been complaining that $100,000 limit on giving to super PACs is too low. Well, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I'm not sure. I mean, the idea that somebody needs to be able to give more than $100,000 from an individual for a third-party PAC just seems to me to be, preposterous. And nobody does that for nothing. I mean, what are they expecting to get?
297-5633. We will return with State Representative John Bell Edwards vying to become Governor Edwards. We've heard that before, but this is a different Edwards, and we'll be back with him in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, 877-217-5757. Michael Farrar producing, and John Bell Edwards going the rest of the distance with us this hour. If you'd like to talk with him, this is a good opportunity. Joseph Conti, I believe, he sends a bit of a softball to you, Representative Edwards. He says, I'd be interested in being a volunteer. How do I get in touch with your staff?
Well, I appreciate that question, Joseph, and you can go to my website, which is johnbellforlouisiana.com, and there's information there on volunteering and signing up. Get us your contact information, and we'll be right back in touch with you. And I very much appreciate that question, Joseph.
All right. Here's a bill that will be a hot one among a few during the session, sponsored in the Senate by Ben Nevers and in the House by Yvonne Dorsey Colom. Raising Louisiana's minimum wage. Louisiana goes by the federal rate at $7.25 an hour. Nevers' bill would raise it to $9.50, and Colom's would go to $10. What do you think of this?
Well, I generally support raising the minimum wage. I think it's important. And, right now, if we just wanted to go back and make the minimum wage what it was in 1968 because of the erosion effect of inflation, you would go all the way to the $10.10. And so these proposals that stop short of that, you know, or I think they seek to be a compromise position to try to get more support. I know that there's a lot of opposition in the conservative community to it, but I just think that we have a moral obligation to make sure that when people work full time, that they don't live in poverty and that they have some ability to raise their families and provide for themselves. You know, and you know, it seems ironic to me that the same people who criticize too many folks on welfare, too many folks on food stamps, don't support the one thing that would allow those people to pull themselves up and not even qualify for that assistance anymore, and that is a raise of the minimum wage. And I understand that it's a two-edged sword, and that there are some economists who say that there will be some jobs lost as a result of this. But, you know, we've done this for, you know, a long time in the United States now, and I don't think the job losses have ever materialized the way that they're advertised by the opponents. So I think it's the right thing to do. You know, whether we go to $9 or $9.50 or whatever, you know, we will have to see. And I think in the House, you indicated that Senator Dorsey Colon had a House measure, but she's actually a senator.
Well, you're exactly right. She used to be a House member. But
correct. In the House, it's going to be Herbert Dixon, who is a representative from Alexandria, and he is the chair of the Labor Committee. And so he has the bill on the House. And of course, one of the things is that will determine, I think, how much support these initiatives get is whether it raises the minimum wage all at once or maybe in a couple or three different steps so that businesses would have an easier time making the changes.
297-5633 for State Representative John Bell Edwards. House Bill 503, here's a question from Terry about a bill filed by Thomas Carmody, a Republican from Shreveport, would make the Bible the state book. What your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Thomas and I were seatmates for my first term, and he is a very dear friend. I like him a lot. This is, as I understand it, because I talked to Thomas about this last week, this is not to make the Bible, but make a particular Bible, which is in a museum here in Louisiana, and as best we can determine, or I should say Thomas could determine, is the oldest book in the state. So it would make that particular book the state book. It is the Bible. And, you know, and for that reason, I suspect that there will be some folks who are opposed to that. You know, I don't start off the session either in favor or opposed to it. I certainly understand that.
I'm sorry.
There's also a historical significance, and that is why we allow classes to be taught in public schools about the Bible from a literary perspective and a historical perspective as well. So I look forward to the debate. That bill will come to the House Judiciary Committee that I sit on, and I look forward to that debate. I have a lot of confidence in Thomas that when he does things, he does them for the right reason, even if we might ultimately disagree.
297-5633 for John Bell Edwards. Chris at Southern University. Hi, Chris. You're on with Representative Edwards.
Good morning, Representative Edwards. I wanted to ask you about your position on the lawsuit that's been filed by the the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority and some other plaintiffs regarding past activities of oil and gas companies and how they may or may not have contributed to land loss and erosion. I know there are several bills, or there's talk of several bills being authored this session to kind of take the legs out of that levy board and perhaps others to institute litigation of this kind, and I was just curious as to your position on this, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, thank you, Chris. That's a great question, and I think this is going to be one of the really hot issues before the legislature this session. The bottom line is that I don't profess to be an expert in this area of the law. I haven't investigated the facts. I know that we have the Flood Protection Authority that has filed the lawsuit. It appears that they have standing to do so. it appears they have filed it in a court with authority to hear this matter, and that's what our court system is for. I have all the confidence in the world in our judicial system, both the criminal component and the civil component. And the oil and gas companies certainly have the wherewithal to hire the very best lawyers and the very best experts to make their case that they haven't done anything wrong. And if they have, that to minimize whatever damages that they might be required to pay. And so I take the position that the lawsuit ought to go forward without in any way presupposing what the merits are and what the outcome should be. And that's my position on that. And any bill that would come before the legislature that would seek to retroactively divest the Flood Protection Authority of the ability to pursue a lawsuit that it has already filed, I think is rather problematic, and I'm not sure that that's the best way for a state to govern itself. And I know from some polling that I have seen that a majority of people in Louisiana believe that this issue ought to be litigated, again, not because they're anti-oil and gas, but because it's been filed. There are serious questions that need to be answered. And by the way, you know, if in fact they have caused erosion of our coastal area, they ought to have to respond in damages mm-hmm. for the amount that they caused. And certainly that would be one funding mechanism for the $50 billion coastal restoration master plan, which over 50 years will require a minimum of $50 billion. And they say that they would really like to have $100 billion to do everything that they want to do. And the only thing we don't have right now with respect to that plan is a funding mechanism.
Lynn in St. Francisville. Hi, Lynn. You're on WRKF with Representative Edwards.
Hi. I'm supportive of you, Mr. Edwards. I wanted to hear your opinion on the gun issue a little more, especially the things that have happened in Florida with the Stand Your Ground and what has happened there with what seems like people kind of using their guns too much.
Well, you know, I don't necessarily want to talk about the specifics of the Stand Your Ground law in Florida because I'm not an expert on it. I do know that there's some controversial cases coming out of Texas with respect to people using guns, and whether it's at a convenience store parking lot or at home or wherever. We haven't had that particular issue here in Louisiana. I will tell you that I am a gun owner. I'm a member of the Florida Parish Skeet and Gun Association. I'm on the board of directors. I'm a previous president of that organization for a couple of years. I really believe in the Second Amendment. I do not fear law-abiding people having access to guns. And so my voting record in the legislature reflects that. At the same time, you know, there are some initiatives on occasion that I think go too far. But for the most part, I am very supportive of an individual's right to possess and to carry guns. And you know, and so I will evaluate legislative initiatives, you know, one by one on a case-by-case basis as they come up. But it's fair to say that as we speak today, that I have an A rating with the NRA because of my support for the Second Amendment.
Dr. Hippolyte Landry, good morning. You're on Jefferson Highway. Hippolyte.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Representative Evans. How is everybody today?
Fine.
Doing fine, sir. Thank you.
Good. Representative Evans, I'm just curious, as a former Army officer, I'm just curious as to what your career was after West Point.
Okay. I graduated from West Point in 1988. I then went to the Infantry Officer Basic Course in Fort Benning, Georgia, and Ranger School. I had already been to Airborne School while I was at West Point. And then I went to the 25th Infantry Division in Hawaii for 3 years, which was a really hardship duty, as you can imagine, to be at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, as a young married officer with no children. It was really great. After 3 years, we went back to the advanced course, the infantry advanced course at Fort Benning, and then I went to the 82nd Airborne Division, where I was in the 3rd Brigade and commanded Charlie Company of the 3rd Battalion in the 3rd Brigade, which is the 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment. And I commanded that company for a couple of years, and at the end of that, I got out of the Army, came back to LSU Law School, and I worked in my first year out of law school at the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal in New Orleans, and I've been back in Amite, my hometown, with a small country law practice since then.
Good to hear from you, Hippolyte.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. I was just curious about what kind of rank did you retire on, Doug?
Well, I didn't retire. I wasn't in long enough to retire, but now that I'm old enough that I could have, I kind of regret that decision a little bit. But I got out as a captain.
Well, we all do that. I did the same thing. I got out as a captain and regret that I didn't keep up my reserve duty and retire, but I didn't. But
sure.
Thank you very much. I'm happy that you did serve in the Army. That makes me happy. And
all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Captain
Landry.
Captain Landry. 297-5633 is your number. As we noted, he noted, John Bell Edwards is a lawyer, LSU Law School graduate. Robert Adley, in our previous discussion with Stephanie Regal, is planning to introduce legislation that would restrict judicial fundraising. He says, I'm working on language in a bill that would say judges cannot take money from lawyers who have court proceedings in front of them. How do you do that? Do you think that's a plausible maneuver by Senator Adley?
Well, look, I have tremendous respect for Senator Adley. He's been in the legislature a long time. I don't know how the legislature could do that, and at the same time, legislators take contributions from people who have issues to come before the legislature. For example, oil and gas, or it could be any interest group out there that has issues that come before the legislature. How are we going to tell judges not to accept contributions from lawyers? And I don't know how that would be workable. At the time I give the contribution to a judge, I may not, but the next day I may file a lawsuit that gets randomly allotted to that judge. I think it's a reaction to one particular incident, and sometimes that's the worst way to make law, is to try to address something like that. So I just don't know how it would be workable, and I also don't want to be hypocritical if we don't extend mm-hmm. those same rules to ourselves.
Aaron in Denham Springs. Aaron, good morning. You're on with Representative Edwards.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
Good. First I was thinking that it would be, what question would I like to ask a representative? But then I figured that was the wrong way to approach this. Because as I'm driving, I couldn't think of any questions. But then I realized that I do have some questions I'd like to ask related to traffic issues in Louisiana. Being driving down I-12, I noticed that lately, over the past several years, they've been lowering and lowering speed limits on the interstate in response to the lots of fatal crashes in the area, and that's a tragedy, of course. But there are several studies, however, that indicate that lower speed limits do not improve traffic accidents.
All right. Your response? You drive that same road, I'm sure.
I do, very often. As far as having higher speed limits, I think on stretches of interstate that are not congested, that may make sense. But as we know, the traffic backs up and sometimes comes to a stop, especially if there's any accidents or construction or things like that. But generally, there's just the volume of traffic trying to get into Baton Rouge in the morning and out in the afternoon would make that particular stretch not a, in my view, a candidate for a higher speed limit. And, in fact, I would have to imagine that the lower speed limits reflect the fact that there's just more volume on that roadway.
All right. Let's take one more caller for Representative Edwards. Larry in Park Forest, good morning. You're on with John Bell Edwards.
Thank you very much, John. Well, John, you have a very good name. We well know that name, Edwards, throughout the state of Louisiana, so that's a positive. But I'm concerned about this. How can we get voters to really go out and vote when you people come up to run for office? Our voting record is very low.
All right. What about stimulating voter turnout?
Well, I'm hopeful that I'm always hopeful that people will go out and vote. I think that the next election we have for governor is going to be one of the most important that we've ever had. And I know people say that every election cycle. But coming on the heels of at that time 8 years of Governor Jindal, and the direction that the state's been going under him. And I think there's a lot of disappointed people out there, especially if they're concerned about K through 12 education, higher education, health care, that sort of thing. I just think there will be a lot of interest. I think you're going to have a good choice to make, you know, a very positive decision to make in voting for me. But also you're going to have a real difference of opinion between myself and other candidates in the race. And so hopefully all of those things together will stimulate interest and turnout, because it is important that people vote.
All right, Representative Edwards, I'm sorry we got a roll, but good luck to you, and we'll talk again, I'm sure, I hope, during the session. And we'll be back tomorrow. I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.